Welcome to Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM Silver City, and on Las Cruces Community Radio, KTAL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, a nonprofit advocacy organization that promotes community health by protecting our environment and natural resources. My first guest this morning is U.S. Senator for New Mexico, Martin Heinrich. Elected in 2012, Senator Heinrich serves on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee and is the ranking member of the Subcommittee on Energy, among other committee assignments. Senator Heinrich has been a champion for New Mexico's public lands, the Gila Wilderness and Gila River, and for growing the clean energy economy. Welcome to Earth Matters, Senator Heinrich.
It's great to be here.
Yes, thanks so much for making time for us here this morning. So we'll start off here with the big conservation news in southwestern New Mexico, the Department of Interior's decision in December to deny an extension for the Gila River Diversion Environmental Impact Statement, which will result in the loss of more than $50 million in construction funding for the harmful Gila River Diversion Project. And what are your perspectives on this latest development?
I think it's really very good news for the Gila River. I had a number of conversations with Secretary Bernhardt expressing my concern over the direction that the proposed projects were heading, how often things had, how often the bar has been moved, and just the fundamental engineering problems that we've seen in many of these proposals, which seem to change by the day. And my hope is that this can be an opportunity and a moment when we can sort of hit the reset button and say, how should we be spending these Arizona water settlement dollars? It would be a great time and an opportunity for the legislature and the governor and those of us in the delegation to all look at whether we can't bring the entire community together and look at some projects that produce real water for the greatest number of people and produce the greatest good, rather than being sort of hell-bent on damming or diverting the Gila River, which is one of the last free-flowing tributaries of the Colorado River system. It's a place that's near and dear to my heart and to many people all across the country, as well as in Grant and Catron County.
Yes, absolutely. And speaking about the Gila River, there's been growing support for long-term protection for the Gila River through wild and scenic river designation, and you've been integrally part of that effort. And what can you give us the status on this proposal?
Yeah, I think we're very close to introducing the final bill, literally days or weeks away. Trying to finalize the maps right now. We've been circulating a discussion draft that is everything minus the maps, because we're still working with agencies to get those finalized. So hopefully very soon we'll be able to put the initial legislation out there. I'm very excited about this. I've always thought that if any place deserved wild and scenic designation under the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act, it's the Gila River and its tributaries. I mean, this is the place where I literally decided to go into public service to run for office on a 53-mile backpack in the Gila Wilderness back in the early 2000s, and all of those tributaries are just magic. And there's very few places like this left. More and more of our country and the world get developed every single year, and it's nice to have these places that provide amazing ecosystem services, but also just provide the solace that people need when they come back from service in the military, or when they're, you know, healing from whatever kind of trauma. This is a very special place, and we should treat it that way.
Yes, and I was wondering if you'd be willing to comment a bit on some. There have been some concerns in the community about the designation, and you know, a lot of misinformation. And I was wondering if you wanted to comment just a little bit on some of those concerns.
Only just to say that I definitely have seen very unfactual information out there about what the wild and scenic designation does. And if it's, I think it's very instructive. It's instructive to look at the legislation and read the language, because that's what a judge will do if there's a dispute. It's also very instructive to look at the rest of New Mexico. We did this on the Rio Grande in a number of years ago, several decades ago. We did it on the Chama. We've done it on a number of rivers in the state, and the same predictions were made. However, they did not come true. What is true is those sections of those rivers are still free-flowing today. They're still providing the recreation. They're still providing the clean water that supports our agricultural communities and our cities. And we have been able to preserve those watersheds in a way that is serving the entirety of our population.
Right, and this seems like it will be a huge benefit to our local outdoor recreation-based economy. Of course, we're trying to diversify our economy away from extractive industry and provide other sources of economic development in our community. It seems like Wild and Scenic will really boost that effort here.
I agree, and oftentimes, you know, what we've learned over time with public land and water special designations is that the very act of putting something on the map is an act of economic development, because there are people, retirees and just people who live for our public lands and waters and recreation, who will come and visit because they'll look at a map of New Mexico and say, what's this wild and scenic river, the Gila, all about? And we need to deal with that recreation responsibly, but it is a key part of how we diversify rural economies. And at a time when so many extractive industries and things that we were able to rely on, you know, had their booms in the 1800s and had a long tail through the 1900s, are really struggling, this is an opportunity that is growing every single year, and we need to take those opportunities and build rural communities wherever we can.
Yes, and for our listeners in Las Cruces, you have some huge news. Our New Mexico delegation was successful in getting White Sands designated as a national park. So again, another boost to southern New Mexico from an outdoor rec standpoint.
Yeah, and we're expecting a lot of additional visitation as a result of that. It's been interesting to me, as somebody who has a real affinity for national monuments, who's been to many of them, who's been involved in the creation of some national monuments, to realize that many people, many of my colleagues in the East, have sort of a misconception that if you're going to a monument, you expect to drive up and there to be some sort of big obelisk with a brass plaque at the bottom talking about some event in history. And when they think about a national park, they know it's a landscape level, landscape scale park service unit. And there are a lot of people who will stop or seek out national parks. And I think we're expecting that to be the case in White Sands in particular.
Great. So thank you so much for making that national park designation a reality. I think that's going to be huge for southern New Mexico. And shifting gears here a bit, people here in southwestern New Mexico are very concerned about the Air Force's proposal to expand F-16 pilot training airspace over the Gila and the Rio Grande Valley from Socorro to Las Cruces. And you stated in a guest column in the Silver City Daily Press that you felt that military training was incompatible with the unique characteristics of the Gila wilderness. And now the draft environmental impact statement has been released and public comment is taking place right now. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the proposal, because as you've said, the Gila is a special place to you.
You know, I think the Air Force is very important to southern New Mexico, but we have an enormous amount of airspace in our state. We have the ability to grow from the current airspace that is designated east of Holloman Air Force Base. But we shouldn't do that at the expense of some of our greatest assets. And I believe that the Gila Wilderness and other wilderness areas in southwestern New Mexico are something truly to be cherished and protected. And I also think that we have to be very careful about having training in places that can have unintended consequences. This is serious training. It involves things like flares and chaff, and those things can have enormous unintended consequences in a forested area or a national forest. So there is a path here for the Air Force to be able to get the airspace that they want and I believe need, and still maintain the Gila as a place of solitude. And I very much hope that they will take that opportunity, and I would encourage all of your listeners to make sure that their voices are heard. I know a lot of people from Grant County turned out at a public hearing recently, but get those written comments in and make sure that the Air Force understands where people in southwestern New Mexico stand.
Great. Okay. Thank you for that. And you know, climate change is also a huge issue right now, with Australia burning up, and we all know that we need to act fast if we're to avert the worst impacts of the global climate crisis. But yet the Trump administration has pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement and rolled back the Clean Power Plan, among many other things. And I'm wondering, what do you think can be done to move forward on climate change in this era of regulatory backsliding and governmental gridlock? You're on a lot of the key energy committees that, so you're kind of in the thick of this stuff right now, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
I think we need to do everything we can at the federal level to prevent as much backsliding as possible. And the good news is, on the power sector, which is what the Trump administration has been largely focused on, is that because we were able to make progress before, particularly in 2015, an agreement that I was very involved in to extend a number of the clean energy tax credits and have them sunset gradually instead of off of a cliff. We've gotten to a place today where clean energy is affordable energy. It is now cheaper to generate from wind and solar than it is from any other source, certainly dramatically cheaper than from coal. That puts us in a position where, even though the president says bombastic things about wind turbines causing cancer and other just absurd, ridiculous things, the economics are driving the power sector emissions down. And we're going to continue to focus on that. I have a particular focus on energy storage, which is going to really be necessary as we get closer to the upper bounds of the power sector, and making sure that we can move power from peak generation times to peak usage times. But we also need to recognize that there are all these other sectors out there that we haven't really started to decarbonize effectively. And so we need a strategy for transportation. That means largely electrification of the passenger vehicle fleet. It means more mass transit in places where the population supports that. And we need to be doing the research in these incredible national labs, including two of which we have right here in New Mexico, to be able to decarbonize those hard-to-decarbonize sectors. Industrial heat processes, making things like aluminum, steel, concrete, ammonia for fertilizer, we've made very little progress on that. That's where our R&D focus should be. And there's been a remarkable amount of Republican openness to focusing on some of that R&D from people like Lamar Alexander. We're trying to capitalize that and put some of those agreeable things together in a package in the Energy Committee right now, and see if we can't get some interim steps that don't necessarily press the hot buttons of, you know, we know the Trump administration, or at least the president, hates wind energy. But there are lots of other things we can be working on right now. And we need to be making sure that this whole effort is not just a federal government effort. Every town should have a climate plan and a resilience plan. Every city, every state. And making sure that we fight this battle at every possible level will get us to success much more quickly and with fewer economic disruptions along the way.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Senator Heinrich, for joining us this morning on Earth Matters and sharing your perspectives with us. And I'd like to invite you back anytime you have news to share with us related to the environment and conservation issues here in New Mexico.
I would look forward to that. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. We'll be right back after this short break and talk about the upcoming state legislative session with Brittany Fallon with the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM Silver City and KTAL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, Director of the Gila Resources Information Project. And for the rest of today's show, I'll be talking to Brittany Fallon, Conservation and Legislative Organizer with the Rio Grande Chapter of the Sierra Club. And we'll be talking about the 30-day legislative session that begins on January 21st. Although it's a short session and the focus will be mostly on budget issues, there are a number of priority bills that environmental advocates will be working on. And thankfully, Brittany is here to fill us in. Good morning, Brittany.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So before we start, let's talk about the difference between a 30-day legislative session and a 60-day legislative session, because that's really critical to understanding what's going to happen here this year.
Sure. The first thing that's probably good to remember about New Mexico is that we have one of the last remaining unpaid citizen legislatures in the country, which means that our state legislators are not paid. They essentially volunteer for 30 or 60 days a year to be a public servant. And that's one of the reasons why New Mexico's state legislation schedule is a little bit wonky. So this year we've got a 30-day session, and a 30-day session is mainly focused just on the state budget. Last year was a 60-day session. During a 60-day session, they do the state budget, but they also hear bills on any possible issue at all. During the 30-day session, legislators are not allowed to file bills that don't have anything to do with the state budget. And there's one exception to that rule, which is if a bill or a topic is on what's called the governor's call. So the governor can specify issues that she wants to hear on the docket in the 30-day. And for example, this year, Governor Lujan Grisham has put things like cannabis legalization, red flag gun law, and education reform on her call for the 30-day session.
That's great. Despite this being a budget session, there are a number of bills that are important to environmental advocates this year, especially related to renewable energy. So I was hoping that we could start out with the community solar bill, because this has been a priority for a number of years now, and it hasn't gotten through the session, or the legislature and made law. So what's up this year with the community solar bill?
I wish I had firm details to tell you about community solar at this point, but I do not. It is being worked on. There is going to be a community solar bill this session. I'll remind folks that last year, community solar passed the floor of the House, and it ended up dying in the Senate. So where we are this year is we're trying to figure out how to get a community solar bill that will make it through the Senate. And for those of you who are new to legislative issues, that our state Senate tends to be more conservative Democrat, and it's often more difficult to pass environmental bills through the state Senate. What community solar is, it's local community solar that allows multiple participants to buy into a community solar garden. For example, if you live in an apartment or you don't own your home and you can't put solar panels on your roof, you could instead buy into a community solar garden and get your power from solar in that way. 19 states in D.C. already have community solar programs. New Mexico is one of the sunniest states in the country. We definitely need to expand solar access here. And it also has the added benefit of helping low and middle income subscribers potentially reduce their energy costs.
That's great. And well, good luck this year on this one. I think there's a lot of community support behind this particular effort because it really is decentralized solar, right? And really helps low-income and middle-income folks. So the governor also has a couple priorities related to renewables, the solar market development income tax credit and the electric vehicle tax credit. What are these bills going to do?
The solar development tax credit was also a governor bill last year, and it was lost in the very end of the session with some bill trading that happened. It ran out of time to get heard. It's also been passed in previous years, but the fund is now empty, so it's time to add money into the fund. What the solar tax credit does is appropriates $10 million for a tax credit to put rooftop solar, and you either get 10% of your purchase and installation costs or up to $6,000, and it can be used for residences, businesses, and agricultural enterprises. This is a governor priority bill, which we're very excited about. And similarly, the electric vehicle tax credit. Now, this one is great because New Mexico hasn't had this before. And the electric vehicle tax credit in particular fits into an arc of legislation and policy that the environmental community and the governor has been working really hard on. And that started last year with the bill that was also a governor bill, I believe, to require New Mexico's utilities to invest in electric vehicle charging stations. So the first step to getting New Mexico to electrify our transportation sector is making sure that we have charging stations all over the state so that electric vehicle drivers don't have what's called range anxiety, where you're worried about running out of battery. After that bill was passed and signed, the governor committed New Mexico to federal standards for clean cars that require auto manufacturers to produce a certain number of electric vehicles a year. So now we're going to have more electric vehicles available on the market in New Mexico, in addition to having more charging stations in New Mexico. So the tax credit is the next step because it's going to help New Mexicans take advantage of the market that we're building here and take advantage of the new infrastructure that our state and utilities are investing in. And I'm proud of this tax credit because it has a lot of measures so that it can reach as many New Mexicans as possible. There is a tax credit for purchasing a new electric vehicle. That tax credit doubles if you make under $50,000 a year. It's available right at the dealership, so you can get it off the price of the car there. You don't have to purchase a vehicle and then apply for the tax credit later. It also has a tax credit for an at-home charger. And that really helps people, for example, who buy a used electric vehicle but want to be able to charge it at home. They can install a charger in their home and get a tax credit for that. And it also includes the same tax credit for an at-home charger to be available at multifamily housing units. So, for example, if an apartment complex wants to install a community charger, the apartment complex can get a tax credit for that.
That's great. So, Brittany, when you say tax credit, is this a gross receipts tax credit, a sales tax credit, or is this an income tax credit?
Oh, that you might be tripping me up with that question.
Okay.
It is more like a rebate, I think.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
You can get the money right off the car at the dealership.
Okay, that's great. That's kind of what it sounded like to me because that. Because some people, if you don't have a huge tax liability, the income tax credit maybe doesn't do much. But if it's a sales tax credit, that's pretty good. That's like a gross receipts tax credit. That seems like a pretty big deal.
The other thing that's nice about this bill is that it has bipartisan support, as did the infrastructure bill that passed last year. We've got both Republican and Democrat sponsors because everybody sees that electrification is the path of the future.
Great. And Senator Pat Woods, right, from Quay County, I think he's one of the sponsors. Is that right?
He is, and he was also one of the sponsors of the infrastructure bill last year and has turned out to be one of our strongest champions in the legislature on electric vehicle issues.
Okay, that's great. And so on the building side, you know, we need to make our buildings more energy efficient. And there's another bill, Community Efficient Energy Development Block Grant. What is that bill going to do?
Energy efficiency is one of those topics that sounds so wonky and inaccessible to a lot of people, but it's really simple. All it means is we're making sure, for example, our windows aren't leaking out our heat, or we're not using appliances that use 10 times the amount of energy as a new appliance, and that we are using light bulbs that use energy and light our homes efficiently. And the reason why energy efficiency is important is because as we move toward a renewable system, we know New Mexico is going to be investing in a lot of wind, in solar, in battery storage. We have to make sure that we are using the energy that we use conservatively, because the more energy we use, the more energy we have to build. And we don't want to have to build energy sources like fracked gas, for example.
Okay.
Now, last year, we passed updates to the New Mexico State Energy Efficiency Standards, which was a big deal, and it means that all new buildings in New Mexico will be built to more efficient standards. And this bill, which we are calling the SEED Block Grant, follows up on that legislation by targeting funding for low-income New Mexicans to help make their homes energy efficient. And the reason why we decided to pursue this is because 20% of New Mexicans live in poverty, and one thing that we know is that low-income households have an energy burden three times that of other households, and that can be because they have old windows that leak out heat, or they have those appliances that are old and use way too much energy. And this program, and right now there's $3 million allocated in the governor's version of the budget for this bill, so we're going to fight to keep it there and fight to get it in the legislative version of the budget as well. It will help over 2,412 households that are on the waiting list in the state for energy efficient services, and right now the state only has funding to serve less than 500 of those families. And that's almost 2,500 people that have gone through the rigmarole of filling out the paperwork, of going through the vetting process, of getting on the waiting list. The actual need in New Mexico is far greater, and we are hoping that this SEED Block Grant will be a complement to programs that the state is already running, and a demonstration project to show what a little bit of money can do to better both the energy burden for low-income New Mexico families, but also to improve New Mexico's energy efficiency overall.
Wow, all these bills sound great, and it's just so inspiring to me that we've got a great slate of legislation this session that is going to make us more energy efficient and reduce our climate footprint at the state level. So, Brittany, we'll be right back after this short break and continue our discussion about the upcoming state legislative session with Sierra Club's Brittany Fallon. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the second half of Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM Silver City and KTAL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Brittany Fallon, Conservation and Legislative Organizer with the Sierra Club Rio Grande Chapter. And the state budget is the priority for the 30-day legislative session that begins on January 21st. And, you know, we're in this really difficult situation, Brittany. State agencies really took a beating under the previous Martinez administration, and at least in the context of regulatory, environmental regulatory agencies, they continue to be understaffed and underfunded and really can't do an adequate job to protect our environment and natural resources. And I'm wondering, as Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham asked for increased funding for agencies in her version of the budget?
Yes, she absolutely has. And unfortunately, that doesn't necessarily mean the agencies are going to get the increases that they need. In the last 8 years under the Martinez administration, the Environment Department, for example, their budget was cut by 20%. And the Energy, Minerals, Natural Resources Department, which is the other big environmental regulatory agency, they have a division called the Oil Conservation Division, which oversees regulation on oil and gas in New Mexico, which, as we all know, is a big part of our state's economy. Their budget was cut by 33% under Martinez, from $11 million in 2007 to $7.5 million in 2017. And that's as oil and gas production increased. So we're in dire straits when it comes to our environmental agencies.
Yes, absolutely. And also, I'll just note that a similar situation in the Mining and Minerals Division, which is an agency that has regulatory authority over operations and reclamation and cleanup at our Grant County copper mines. They're in a similar situation and a lot of vacancies, right?
Yes, indeed. And I should have added as well that the state land office also needs additional staff, because right now they have 20 field staff to oversee 13 million acres statewide, and that is with a 27% application increase. And all of our agencies are seeing increases, even as they are understaffed and underfunded. We need to make sure that they get the legal, administrative, program staff, the equipment, the technology that they need to protect New Mexico people, health, and businesses.
Right, and also get staff with technical expertise and also the compensation, the salaries have not necessarily been competitive with surrounding states. So the governor has also asked for an increase in salaries, too, as part of her budget, right?
And I can talk a little bit about the budget process and why we're going to have such a fight ahead when it comes to these agencies. Advocating for increased agency budgets is going to be one of the Sierra Club's top priorities this session.
Yes, please tell us about this, because to me, being up in the legislature, all the budget issues are such a black box to me. They're just so confusing, hard to really understand what happens every step of the way. So, yes, please explain it to me, or to us, to our listeners.
I will try and explain it as best I can, but it is still somewhat of a black box to me as well. How this works is, and this is going to be a rough explanation, the governor puts together her version of the budget, which she pieces together based on what her agencies and her staff are saying they need to do their job and to carry out her vision of state government. Then the legislature puts together their version of the budget based on presentations that the agencies have given and based on performance measures that the Department of Finance carries out on how agencies have spent their money in years past. So the governor releases her budget, the legislature releases their budget. Typically, the legislature's budget is lower than the governor's budget, and because the budget it's a bill that has to pass both the House and the Senate, and it originates in the House. It's always House Bill 2 is the state budget bill. Typically, the legislature, which in this case is the House Appropriations and Finance Committee, starts with the lower version of the budget. So even though the governor, for example, has asked for increases to the Environment Department, increases to the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department, and the legislature has also recommended increases for those departments, the legislature is going to start with their recommendation for agent frequency increases, which is lower than what the governor's recommendation is, which is really disheartening because we know that not only do our agencies need and deserve the higher amount that the governor recommended, really they need more than even that. And the governor's hands are tied in that she has to submit to the legislature a balanced budget across all agencies, and she unfortunately cannot give everybody every single resource that they need. So, this week, and both environmental agencies are going to be heard on this coming Friday, which will have passed by the time this show airs. The environmental agencies will go to the legislature. They will present before the House Finance and Appropriations Committee, and they will try and explain why they need the increase that the governor allocated rather than the increase that the legislature allocated. And I'll be there. Lots of other environmental organizations will be there to back the agencies up and say, yes, here are all of the things that they are doing. Here are the increases in applications or permit fees or whatever that they are dealing with. And on top of that, we have a proactive governor on a lot of different environmental issues. And that the issues that she is championing also requires more staff and more resources for her agencies. So she is both trying to get them up to speed on what they should have been doing for the 8 years under Martinez, while also expanding their duties so that New Mexico can enact things like a state methane rule, like clean car standards. And we need to get them resources for these new programs, not just make up the loss that they've suffered for the last 8 years.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, just here in Grant County, we have permits for the Chino, Cobre, and Tyrone mines that are over a decade out of date. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is, staffing. And these are huge reclamation cleanup plans that need to get reviewed by folks, and financial assurance and reclamation cost estimates. And so without staff, it just happens at a snail's pace. So this is super important all over the state, as well as for us here in southwestern New Mexico. So Brittany, you mentioned that there are hearings taking place on before House Appropriations and Finance. Should our listeners call their legislators? Is that an appropriate thing to do? How can people get involved in supporting the governor's budget, increased funding for the agencies?
So as we maybe alluded to earlier, the budget process can be very opaque and very difficult to follow. But if your personal state legislator is either on the Senate Finance Committee or on the House Finance and Appropriations Committee, or your senator is somebody in leadership like Peter Wirth or Mamie Stewart, or somebody in House leadership like Brian Egoff, those are the people that have the most power to influence the budget process. And if you are listening in the South and your senator is John Arthur Smith, he is one of the strongest voices shaping what the state budget looks like, and he should absolutely be hearing that his constituents want our environmental agencies to be well-funded.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's shift gears here. There is discussion about doing a memorial related to bonding for industries like oil and gas or mineral development. And of course, this was a topic during last year's legislative session when bonding was taken up for copper mines. So what is envisioned this legislative session, a memorial as opposed to a bill?
So one of the benefits of a memorial is that it does not need to be on the governor's call, which I mentioned earlier, in a 30-day session. So this memorial, which I have not seen a draft of this, I can't go into too much detail, but it's going to be a priority of Land Commissioner Stephanie Garcia Richard. And she's trying to point out that the bonding requirements in New Mexico are out of date and are not in line with what her office and other offices need in order to protect our state lands and protect our public lands. And her vision is to request a study that will look, that will review all the bond adequacy for the state land office, but also, for example, the Oil Conservation Division, which I mentioned earlier, and that the memorial will then make recommendations regarding proposed changes to bonding authorities. Eventually, I think this will need to be either a rulemaking or legislation, but she's trying to get the process started to get the research and the numbers to show what kinds of increases we need in our state. And this is going to help us hold industry accountable for what happens after they leave the state or after they abandon a well.
Right. And so posting a bond or financial assurance, it ensures that there are financial resources available to clean up and reclaim some of these industrial sites, mines, whatever the activity is. So it's super important.
It is super important, because if the bonding mechanism does not adequately pay for cleanup, for example, and the company leaves the state, the person who's on the hook for paying the remainder of those cleanup costs is the taxpayer.
Yes, absolutely. So this really is a polluter pays concept. So you make a mess, it's your responsibility to clean up your mess. Brittany, let's take a short break and we'll return to continue our conversation about the upcoming legislative session with Sierra Club's Brittany Fallon. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM Silver City and KTAL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project. I'm talking today with Brittany Fallon, Conservation and Legislative Organizer with the Rio Grande Chapter of the Sierra Club. So, Brittany, we've been talking this morning about all of the proactive bills that advocates will be working on. And, of course, there are likely to be a bunch of bad bills that we'll want to stop. So just give us a sense of sort of what this means. What's a bad bill?
Sure. For example, there was a bill last year to give coal a tax break. That's an example of a bad bill.
Yeah, that's a pretty bad
bill. We should not be subsidizing fossil fuels.
Right. And I should say, actually, I think we're going to see again this year, according to the New Mexico CAP entity, we're likely to see two bills related to the Gila diversion. One's a memorial. So the memorial that was run last year, sponsored by Representative Armstrong, Representative Dow, and there might have been Senator Ramos too on the Senate side, but to support development of 14,000 acre feet of water from the Gila River. Advocates, we were successful in getting that memorial defeated. And then the other bill that the CAP entity is hoping to rerun again this year is the one to make them a political subdivision of the state, which would set the CAP entity up as a regional water authority. So despite the fact that the Secretary of Interior has denied the CAP entity its request for an extension and they've lost construction funding to build the diversion, they are still committed to trying to move forward with the diversion and just find funding from elsewhere. So, and they're not giving up on the idea of becoming a political subdivision of the state. So the Gila Conservation Coalition, and I'm sure Sierra Club and Conservation Voters New Mexico will all be collaborating on making sure that those bills don't get through. Although, first, they have to get deemed germane before
right.
they can even get heard. So that's really unclear if that will even happen, right?
Yes. Although a memorial doesn't have to be ruled germane. So we'll be working with you on that one for sure.
Okay. Great. And so, you know, we really need citizen activists to get involved this legislative session. And Brittany, the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club is organizing Environment Day, right, as an opportunity for citizen lobbyists to engage in the legislative process. Can you tell us a bit about that, that event?
Absolutely. Every year, the Sierra Club takes the lead in organizing different grassroots lobbyist activist days at the legislature. And during the 30-day session, we host one day, which we're calling Environment or Climate Crisis Day. And organizations from every corner of the state will be participating on every issue, whether you care about wildlife or public lands or oil and gas or clean energy or river health. There is something for you on Environment Day. It is on January 28th this year, and we'll be there from 7:30 the whole day. People can arrive around 9 a.m., meet us in the rotunda. We'll talk to you about what environmental bills are being heard in committee that day. And there'll be tabling and information from all the different organizations in the rotunda. At 12 o'clock, we have environmental champion legislators come to the rotunda and talk about their bills, talk about the environmental issues that they care about. And this year, I think it's going to be good. We have over 100 elementary school-aged children who are part of Sierra Club's Global Warming Express program. These are young children who act on climate change, for example, by encouraging their schools to install solar or encouraging their schools to enact an idling ban so that parents who are waiting in line to pick up their kids aren't contributing to emissions. We've got about 100 kids coming this year. They are so informed and so active, and they really breathe a verve into the building that building desperately needs sometimes, especially when it comes to climate change. And as somebody who is older, it just gives me hope to see these young kids talk about climate change and see how smart they are and how much they care. Children really view the world in black and white, what is good and what is bad. And because of that, they view climate change in the way that we all should be viewing climate change, which is we have to be doing something about it, and there's no other option. There's no compromise. We must act. And so I'm really taking my cue this Environment Day from the kids. We're going to have them do speeches and songs in the rotunda when the legislators come as well. I'm arranging to have the kids sit in the gallery and witness what happens on the floor when people are voting on bills. And while the kids do that, what any adults will be doing is visiting their legislator. We'll coordinate groups. So say you're coming from Silver City, we'll hook you up with the other people who are there from Silver City, and we'll have one of our staff people or somebody from another organization take you to visit both your representative and your senator, and you can talk to them about whatever issues are important to you. And we'll have fact sheets about all of the bills that are being heard this session. If there's a committee that is hearing one of our bills that day, we'll organize to send people in groups to go to that committee and testify. And we'll also do a little training at the beginning of the day to teach people how to talk about the bills that I've talked about with you on this radio show, so that you can answer some of your legislators' questions. And for the most part, it's really friendly. It's not scary. It is a huge showing of support for the environment. Last year, between 400 and 500 people came, with about 100 plus kids coming this year. I'm anticipating it to be even bigger, and everybody should come and participate in what is a really fun group day that's just meant to be major visibility for the issue of our time.
Absolutely. I can attest to the fact that it is a super fun day and a really wonderful opportunity to engage our elected officials, our state representatives, and also meet other advocates around the state. And so, Brittany, how can people sign up for Environment Day?
Sure. There's a couple different ways. I'm with the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club, so you can just find us online and ask to participate. But I also have a link that I'm going to read out to register to participate in Lobby Day, which is tinyurl.com/lobby2020. And if you go to that link, there'll be a form to fill out so that we know that you're coming. We'll have information for you ahead of time, like who your legislators are in case you're not sure. And it also allows you to select things like which issues matter to you. There's another way that people can stay informed and participate, which is through a email listserv that I run. It is called Rio Lobby, after the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club. And it is several thousand New Mexicans who are interested in following environmental legislation. And every Sunday during the legislative session, I send out a summary email that includes the committee schedule for the week, which bills are being heard in which committee, whether we support or oppose those bills, if there is an issue that we really need citizen activists to come speak for. And in general, I use the list to just keep people informed on, for example, do we need help on community solar? Do we need help on the budget? What is the date that you can come? Which legislators are giving us trouble? Who can I have you call to help make a difference in our state?
That's great, Brittany. So how do people sign up for Rio Lobby? Do they email you or?
Yeah, if you come to Lobby Day, we'll get you signed up. But if you can't make it to Lobby Day, my name is Brittany Fallon. I work for the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club. You can definitely Google me. But my email is brittany.fallon@sierraclub.org, B-R-I-T-T-A-N-Y dot F-A-L-L-O-N@sierraclub.org. You can shoot me an email and I will add you to the list.
Yes, and so people from southern New Mexico were pretty far from Santa Fe. It's hard to get to the roundhouse for the session sometimes. So it's still important for people to engage from their computers, right, during the session?
Yes, absolutely.
So how can people do that? What would you need people to do?
The first and most important thing is knowing who your legislators are. And you can find that out by going to the New Mexico legislature website, nmlegis.gov, and entering your address in and finding out who your state senator is and who your state representative is. And it's always helpful to take a look and see what committees do they serve on. Do you have a senator that serves on Senate Conservation that is going to take a vote on every conservation bill? Do you have a House representative on the House Finance and Appropriations Committee and they might have a big say in the budget process? It's good to know those things. And then if you're on Rio Lobby, I will always identify when I need people to call their legislator to say, I really want you to vote in favor of this bill, or I really oppose this bill as a New Mexican and I want you to vote against it. And that becomes particularly important when a bill goes to the floor. That's a lot of votes that I need to get to pass our legislation. And calling your legislator is so easy. It can be a little scary. I didn't do it for the first time until a couple years ago, and I was surprised at how quick, easy, and painless it was. And they all have staff that will answer. They'll know the role. They'll say, what's your name? What's your zip code? What bill are you calling for? Are you in favor or are you opposed? And that's pretty much it. So you just call, you get tallied on the yes, I support or no, I don't spreadsheet, which then gets passed on to the legislator so they know what their constituents want. You can also email your legislator. Lots of legislators do check their emails, and if they don't, usually their staff does. You could also write a postcard, for example. That's really effective. And then, of course, the most effective thing, if you can, is coming in person, either to the Roundhouse, to their office, to talk to them. And I'm always available. I'm there every day. I often take people to visit their legislator if they're not sure the lay of the building. But also a lot of legislators go back to their districts during the legislative session on the weekends, for example, and they host legislative town halls, or they just have office hours for their constituents to hear about how the legislative session is going. And you should absolutely feel free to reach out to your person and talk to them anytime. That's what their job is, especially during the 30-day legislative session this year. Their job is to listen to what you as their constituent want.
Absolutely. And I encourage everybody to get involved this legislative session. There are some amazing bills related to the climate crisis that we really need to get involved. We are in a crisis, and if we're going to move things forward and address this issue, we all have to get involved. So we've got some terrific opportunities to get some good bills over the finish line. So Brittany Fallon, conservation and legislative organizer with the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club, thank you so much for talking with us today here on Earth Matters.
Thank you so much for having me.
For more information about bills being considered in this year's state legislative session, visit the legislature's website at nmlegis.gov. A podcast of today's show and past programs are available in the Earth Matters archive at gmcr.org. Thank you to our audio engineer, Carolyn Smith, and we hope you'll join us for next week's edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, 89.1 FM Silver City, and KTAL, LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces.